Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show tonight dealing with alternative energy and how it can be used to help save our world and to make it a better place in a practical way. Now, we can talk about all kinds of stuff way out there, and if there's time in today's show, maybe I'll even say a few things about the real far-out stuff. But I'm really concerned about what can we do today, right now, and in the next, say, 5 to 10 years, because that's about how much time I think we've got before things get really dicey. And for those of you who are not familiar with the show, this is a show that deals with the concepts of metaphysics and physics kind of put together, so you might say science and things that go beyond science, and then in addition to that, anything dealing with questions of spirituality, all put together, which is, I guess, what we call it, Why Life Is. And today's show, of course, deals with some very practical matters of, are we going to be able to be great stewards to this planet and make it a better world, or are we going to wipe it out and make it into something really toxic and a problem? Hopefully, we're going to do the former, because the latter is not going to be a place I'm going to want to hang around. And I think most of you, our listeners out there, are going to say the same thing. But it's up to us to make the changes. And I want to be emphatic about that concept. This is volume 3. This is show number 3 on the same subject. And I've been trying to be as emphatic as possible with this idea that sitting around and just talking about this issue for another 5 years, it's only going to make things worse. And I know that there's some organizations that are directing people to go to their websites, give them money, become part of the solution and all this. And it's about, like, signing petitions or maybe calling a congressman or two. Those are fine. If you want to do those things, that's okay. The only problem with that is that isn't going to probably do anything to solve the problem. Even though they say it's going to, it probably isn't. And if you really want to solve the problem, each of us has to take some responsibility for the problem right now. That's what this show is about, is taking responsibility now. So I hope I'm not offending anybody, for those of you who say, well, I don't want to take responsibility. Well, I just want to sit and I'll make a couple phone calls or send in a postcard or two. Okay, but I'm saying that it's not likely that that's going to get the job done. What's going to get it done is each of us, to begin with, conserving energy. The more energy we conserve, the less we have to produce, and the less we will use of the present methods of producing energy, which unfortunately have some serious drawbacks and are adversely affecting our planet. So if we really want to do something, the first thing is to conserve, and that's the easiest thing to do. There is nothing easier than to conserve energy because, number one, we're in charge of the energy we use, for the most part. Really, believe it or not, we aren't really in charge of it. And we can make changes that are not too painful, even not too expensive, and in the long run may save us substantial amounts of actual funds, money, while we are more comfortable in our lifestyle and at the same time helping to save the world. How's that for a good deal? I think it's a great one. And I'm going to tell you more about what we can do about those things that are practical and that make sense. Today's show, I want to start off with some ideas about transportation and how to get from point A to B using less fuel or energy, depending upon what methods you're using. And what are the basic ideas or concepts behind the problem, okay? Now, we could say, well, it'd be best if we all just walk every place we go. That's great if every place you're going to walk to is within a mile or two of where you presently are. Beyond that, it becomes pretty impractical. So that really isn't the solution. And for those of you who are bicycle enthusiasts, et cetera, those have their limitations, too. For many people, they're just not in the kind of physical condition that they're going to be able to use a bicycle to go any place they want. And the weather can become quite inclement. I live in a climate here in Arizona that it can get pretty darn hot, and getting out on a bicycle is like you're going to get fried. So, or I'm sure others live in very cold climates where, you know, you'll be slip-sliding around on ice and snow, and bicycles are not practical for that either. So those kinds of things are great for small, we'll say, answers in particular limited situations and for only some people. But for the rest of us, we need some practical solutions for saving gasoline or diesel fuel or biofuels or oils, salad oil, whatever you might be, frying oil, whatever you might be using these days, to try and use less, because using more is where we get into a problem. Conservation is the first thing. Okay, the basic idea in moving anything is that there's a thing called inertia, and it requires enough energy to overcome the force of gravity pushing against something else, which is usually like a street or the ground or whatever, that produces a pressure that we have to overcome in order to move. That makes sense, of course. That's like elementary physical science kind of stuff. And what does that mean? Well, it means that there's a couple things. It means that the smoother the surfaces that you're moving over, the easier it is to move. It means that the weight of the total object that you're trying to move, it plays an important role in how much energy it takes to move it. Well, that makes sense, too. And then there are some other definable elements that come into play, like wind. When you start going at faster speeds, and this doesn't necessarily apply if you're going relatively slow, but if you're going like 50, 60, 70, 80 or more miles an hour, wind becomes a pretty big factor, because the wind itself, we're not only moving on the ground, but we're moving through this kind of invisible stuff that's air around us, and we have to push that aside, and that takes considerable amounts of energy as we move faster and faster. As a matter of fact, every time you double your speed, whatever speed you're going at, it's going to take four times as much energy to push against the wind once you're going over about 30 or 40 miles an hour, for those of you who calculate in miles per hour. And so this is important to recognize, that wind becomes an element in this whole process. Now you might say, okay, how do you save energy? Gas prices are up, going up to the moon, and diesel's about the same. Diesel's actually higher than gas now because they're taking sulfur out of it, and as they take sulfur out of it, it costs more to buy it. That's why it jumped up about a year or two ago. And so the object is, how do we accomplish anything that seems like it's so intractable? And one of the things you can consider is, if you're driving a vehicle, a car, reduce the weight of what you're hauling in. In other words, don't keep all of your old golf clubs and everything else in your trunk. Don't carry needlessly heavy objects very far, unless you absolutely have to, because that increases the weight and that produces more, a need for more energy. Now, some people say, well, what about carrying other people? Well, if you're both going, or three or four of you going in the same direction, that actually saves energy. That's carpooling. And that makes sense, although it does take slightly more energy to move a car with two people, three people, or four people than just one. So there is a slight, there's an offset there. It's not a lot, because unfortunately our vehicles weigh vastly amounts more in weight than we do, which is kind of a stupid idea if you think about it. Why don't we make cars much lighter, and trucks and everything else? Well, there's reasons for that too, but the problem is that at our present level, everything weighs considerable amounts and takes a lot of power to move the whole thing around. What else can you do? Inflating tires to the maximum pressure recommended by either the tire manufacturer and the manufacturer of the vehicle is important, because the higher the pressure, the less rolling resistance there is to move a vehicle. Most people don't know that, and they say, well, I kind of like it, the tire's a little softer, and this is actually, the harder the better, but unfortunately, it may jar your teeth a little bit. But take the bumps a little easier, watch the road a little more clearly, because if you inflate them to the maximum amount you can, tires can save you like 10% of your gas mileage or more. And bio tires, by the way, this is something I've known for some time, a lot of people don't, that take higher pressures. Because tires, depending upon the make and brand, etc., they have different pressures that apply, And higher pressure ones tend to give you better gas mileage because you can put more air in them. And you have to buy ones that fit your vehicle. So obviously you can't just buy the highest pressure tires but don't fit, because then it's not going to make any sense either. Another thing that helps, and most people don't know about this one, this goes back to my youth. When I was just a kid in Chicago, and this is a long time ago, it's actually, believe it or not, right around 1950-51. Oh boy, am I dating myself? Yes, I was watching television, and there was a fellow on television who used to sell tires. Now, this is amazing, because I'd like to know who this guy was, and if any of you do know, you, oh, by the way, I didn't even mention this, you can call in tonight and let me know. I would love to know the name of this guy just for, well, for just whatever. I'd just like to know his name. But if you want to call in, you can, 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S., if you're in Canada, 888-815-9756, and you can always email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. I'll get those emails off the air because it's too hard to address them while they're coming in. I've tried that before, and nah, we're not going to do that anymore. Okay, but you can email me as soon as I'm off the air, and I'll respond maybe next week or whatever. Now, what this fellow did, this is amazing for 1950, is he would sell his tires, but he would fill them with just pure nitrogen. And nitrogen reduces the amount of heat that is built up in the tire. The tire lasts a lot longer, and it gives you like 5 to 10% better gas mileage. If you fill them up to the maximum levels and you put in the nitrogen, you can get up to 15, even 20% better gas mileage, depending upon the vehicle and the pressures, etc. That's an amazing thing, because heat is energy. It's the energy from your, ultimately from the gasoline you're putting in the vehicle that's being put into the tires, that's wearing them out faster, that nitrogen tends to inhibit. The nitrogen keeps the tires cooler than just the nitrogen and oxygen. It's the oxygen that tends to make the tires much hotter. And there's about 20% oxygen in the air we breathe. So a nitrogen is almost like, it's like almost the rest of all the air we breathe is like nitrogen. There's CO2, there's other trace gases, but they don't amount to much. So this guy was filling up his tires that he sold with nitrogen. People would come back to him, and he would refill them for them for free. There was no charge. And there is a retailer, or wholesaler, I guess, I don't know what we call them these days, Costco, who has started to do the same thing a year or two or three ago. They started filling their tires with nitrogen if people wanted to have it done. And so they are replicating this thing some 50 to 60 years later. But the amazing thing is this fellow was doing this in the early 50s in Chicago, and that was the first time I had actually heard about that. Now, I was just a little tyke at the time, and I don't know if I really understood all of the science behind it, but I learned enough as hearing the commercial, et cetera, to research it a little bit and to know that it would make tires run cooler. Now, remember, you also save the life of the tires. They approximately increase from 50% to 100%. 50 to 100% longer life of tires by putting only nitrogen in the tires. That's an amazing number. So this guy was not only selling tires, but in some ways you could say, well, isn't that like cutting off his nose? Because in a way, yeah, people are going to get a lot more life out of their tires, and they may not come back to buy tires, but it was really a goodwill gesture, and also it kept them in contact with his customers because they kept coming back in to get their tires refilled with nitrogen. It wasn't such a bad sales idea, even though the tires would obviously last longer. But then again, they got happy because they said, hey, I bought these tires and they lasted a lot longer than my last check because I got them filled with nitrogen. Okay, so nitrogen, that's a thing to think about. Now, you can check out your local Costco and see what they say about that. I think you have to buy the tires there. I'm pretty sure. But you can check it out. Maybe there's some other plan that they've got. And if they don't have a plan, there are several things you can do. Number one, you can try to work out a deal and try to get them to, for 50 cents or a dollar, they'll fill your tires up with nitrogen, even if you didn't buy them there, and which would be a great thing for them to be doing. And we'll mention it to them, too, by the way. I think it's something that's worthwhile. And then, in addition to that, if you really want to get into this, you can get from various locations nitrogen, which is not a dangerous gas. It's all around us. In different size canisters, and you can fill up your tires yourself, and you can do your whole block, all your neighbors, you can fill everybody up with nitrogen. You can go into a collective. Each person can add a buck or two a month into it, and it'll pay for all the nitrogen because it isn't very expensive. And you're mostly paying for the rental of the tank, and even that isn't all that much money. And if you're filling everybody's tires up, they're all going to be benefiting from this one activity. And remember, fill them up as much as you can because the higher pressures are better. Okay, you might say, whoa, that was a long day for this nitrogen. But actually, it's a significant thing. We're talking about saving maybe 20% of our fuel mileage. Think about it right now. If there was 20% more gasoline in the United States, gasoline would be approximately a dollar less per gallon. Okay, you got that? About a dollar less per gallon than it is right now, wherever you are living, if you're in the U.S. Now, I know some of you are not in the U.S. That's okay. But I'm just letting you know, it will be a dollar less per gallon, that's U.S. gallon, in the United States. That's a lot of money. And you might say, well, how come 20% more gas produces maybe a quarter to a third less money? Well, the reason is that it has to do with the way the markets work. Once you exceed the demand by even a small amount, the market goes up much faster due to speculation and other issues than the real supply does. So the supply goes down. So it has to do with the way the markets work. So we could save about a dollar a gallon just by getting 20% better mileage on the vehicles, and it's so simple to do. Now, I'm not finished. I'm just starting. I'm on a roll here about what we can do about our vehicles. Okay, so we take the weight out. We bump up the pressures. We put in nitrogen in the tires. Okay. Another thing that I recommend is there are certain additives, and I'm not going to mention them on the air because people are going to think I'm advertising, and I'm not going to advertise to these folks. But if you want to know what additives I suggest, now these are additives to the engine itself, not to gasoline. I don't believe there's anything you should add to gasoline that will unconditionally help. I've tried various things, and generally speaking, it's on a vehicle-to-vehicle basis, and it's too iffy to say do this or that. But there are some things you can add to the engine to make the engine have less friction as the engine operates, and also you can do this to your transmission as well. And you can bump up about another 5, 6, 7% by adding these other things in to the engine. And if you want to know about that, do email me. I really appreciate the people that emailed last week. We sent out stuff to them. We'll continue to do that. But I just don't want to mention the products on the air because I'm concerned about people thinking I'm doing always getting a kickback from them. You know, no, I'm not. I'm not. But again, this is a little bit specialized. It may not work in every engine. It may not work in all. But it seems I've used it so often, and this is for many decades, that I'm pretty well convinced that it will get you like 5 to 7% in that ballpark more fuel mileage just by reducing the friction in the engine and in the transmission, reducing the heat in both. And remember, heat is your gas. What produces the heat is always gasoline. What else can we do? How about using the brakes less often? This is a little exercise, and I suggest you try doing this. Every time you use the brakes, figure that's gasoline going out the tank. It's bye-bye. Because the heat that goes into the brakes that stops the car is gasoline that started the energy that produced that heat. So if you use your brakes less, meaning that you time your movement down the street so that you come to a rolling stop, if possible, that you are not having to change your speed very often. You try to drive at a consistent rate of speed. You try to keep enough distance between you and other people so that you don't use up your fuel by constantly having to put on the brakes and then accelerate, put on the brakes and then accelerate. That could be good for easily another 20% of your gas mileage, easily. If you were to practice that at a consistent rate, it takes a lot of doing. You have to look further ahead. Watch to see where your eyes are. Are they right in front of your car or your truck, or are they significantly down the street? The further your eyes are looking, the more you're planning ahead and the more you're capable of succeeding in this particular exercise. So it's really worthwhile. Now, if you happen to have one of these gauges I'm going to mention now, use it, which is a gauge that tells you your immediate fuel mileage as you're driving. There's a few vehicles that have that, a lot that don't. You can buy an aftermarket one and have it put on for like $100. It's worth it to some people because it tells them immediately how they're driving and what they can do to make their driving more efficient, because their mileage goes up instantly on this little, it's like a little mini computer. And it has to be installed, though, in a professional sense. Most people would find it pretty difficult to do themselves, but you can go to some, not an auto expert necessarily, but one of these places that has the general skills to be able to do automotive work, and they should be able to put it on. And if you decide to go that route, it probably will increase your overall gas mileage because you'll get feedback. It's like biofeedback, but we'll call it pedal feedback, between your brake pedal and your gas pedal and how you're actually tending to drive your car. That's a helpful thing. Now, we're almost, you know, you start thinking about this, we haven't even barely touched on the subject, and look at how much fuel we could be saving. And I haven't even gotten into any of the big stuff, but I mean, this is amazing that we all could be participating in this and really making a difference if we want to. Now, another thing that most people don't know is that at low speeds, it pays to drive with the windows down and the air conditioning off, because the air conditioner takes 1 or 2 miles to a gallon in most cars. And it varies. Some cars are more efficient than others, so it really depends. Older cars tend to take more power when they have the air conditioning on than newer cars. But regardless, it takes some. Now, if you're going very fast, like over 30 or 35 miles an hour, wind becomes a problem. And if you lower your windows to keep yourself cool because you don't want to run the air conditioning, unfortunately, you'll probably burn just as much fuel from the wind drag coming into the car and out of the car than keeping the windows closed and running the air conditioner. You probably didn't know that one. I know. That's another one that people don't know about. But that's it. Get over about 30, 40 miles an hour and you have to keep the windows up because you're not going to save anything by not running the air conditioning. And for a lot of people, air conditioning is almost a necessity if you're in a warm climate. We're in the summer now, and almost everybody's going to be using it throughout the U.S. at least. So I think that if we're going to save any energy, the best way to do it is in the morning or in the evening when the sun isn't really beating down on you, and that's when it can be helpful. Another thing that can be helpful is alternative energy approaches. That's the name of the company that I, along with the people who I'm a member with and that we're interested in trying to save energy. What we're doing is we're trying to come up with ways to save energy in every way of life. Now, since today we're talking about cars, one of the things we're dealing with are window films. And some of them are amazing. There's these nanotechnology window films, along with some other ones. They're just amazing in reducing the amount of energy that is coming into either office or house or car. Now, most of the window films that are on vehicles are pretty worthless because they don't really block most of the energy coming into the car. As a matter of fact, they block more visible light than they do of energy total. Whereas the films we're talking about do the exact opposite. They allow most of the light to come in, the visible light, but block most of the heat. And you can legally use them almost everywhere, at least on side windows and back windows. Front window, probably just along the top legally, because there's laws against putting stuff on windows because they're afraid it might affect your vision. But at any rate, just using it on other windows, this material could dramatically drop the inside temperature of a vehicle, and that reduces the load on the air conditioning. It makes the car more comfortable as well. And that can save a little bit of energy. We're talking about maybe a mile per gallon from just using the tint, plus making the whole vehicle just a heck of a lot nicer to drive in. And I'm saying use this stuff if you've already put tinting on, because the tinting you have probably isn't doing the right job. If you think it is, that's fine. But most likely it isn't, because I've tried them all, as I say, and I haven't found anything that really works. This stuff, again, is almost clear. So it doesn't have that dark appearance. Now, if you want the dark appearance, you could use that as well, because maybe some people don't want anybody nosing in them, looking in them. But you can only go so dark in most states now, because they have limitations in that, because the police want to be able to see in, and that sort of stuff. So that being the case, you you could still use the darkest that you're allowed to use if you wanted to make this stuff darker. But it wouldn't change the overall effect. The effect is coming from the stuff that I'm talking about that knocks out most of the energy so that it's outside of the curve and not inside. Very important. It also saves your interior. For those of you who live in Arizona, you know what I'm talking about. Cracked dashes and seats that look like they've been worn by elephants, but really it's mostly the sun that just deteriorates the fabrics, et cetera. And all that stuff. All that stuff can be avoided, which is a great thing. Especially the UV. I mean, the stuff we use gets rid of all the UV. So you don't have UV coming in and just destroying things, which is a good thing. Still might want to use a front window screen. All right. So let's go on. What other things can we do if we want to try to conserve our energy? Well, the first thing that I would have said to begin with is to buy a vehicle that uses less fuel if you're in the mood and in the position to be able to do so. Right now, the best alternatives for passenger cars are hybrids. If you can wait a few months, they're going to have plug-in hybrids. Or you can have them retrofitted, but it's an iffy proposition in terms of the cost versus what you get back. Now, hybrids can get you up to 50 miles to a gallon or so, and they're going to probably be up to 100 miles per gallon within about 2, 3, 4 years. So if you don't need a vehicle right now, and you can do everything else I'm saying, you're going to make a difference. If you can afford it and you don't mind the fact that the hybrids are going to get more efficient as time goes by, they'll have plug-ins, so they certainly go out and get whatever you can get right now that gets better gas mileage. And if it isn't a hybrid, then look for vehicles to get the best gas mileage, especially around town. I know some of them say 35 miles to a gallon, but they only got 20 in town, and most people are driving more of the time in town. Now, if you happen to do a lot of open-road driving, then go for the one with the most gas mileage on the road, for sure. Also, use the cruise control. It's been proven, because we are not perfect creatures, us, that we tend to move up and down on that gas pedal not subconsciously as we're driving, and that wastes fuel, as much as 1 mile per gallon on most road trips. So you want to save another mile per gallon, use the cruise control as much as practical. If you have cruise control, and if you're buying a new vehicle or any vehicle, try to get one that has cruise control, because it will save another mile per gallon. Boy, I'm saving so much energy here, I feel as though I'm going to be swimming in gasoline before long. This is amazing. Well, anyway, listen, I'm going to come back and tell you a whole bunch more. I hope this isn't too detailed, but, you know, if you're going to tell somebody how to save fuel, you got to go into these things. We'll go into the more general stuff when we come back, the bigger picture, et cetera. But I'm having a good time talking about this stuff. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about practical ways of saving energy, and some of it's alternative energy. Others are just, I guess you would call it common sense energy, maybe. And for those of you who are counting all those numbers, I hope it's starting to add up, because I was talking to my, well, I'll call her my engineer on this side. Of course, Seth is our engineer on the other side in California, but what was going through our head is, how much do these numbers get up to? You know, before war, we're going to start selling oil to the Saudis because we already have so much left over. But really, if we all do these things, it would be virtually a total reality shift in terms of importing foreign oil. A lot of other things would just overnight change. And I'm saying that we can do these things right now. Now, some of you might be saying, yeah, but there aren't enough hybrids to buy. Did you know there's a waiting list for this one and that one? Well, yes, I know that. But you know, it's amazing things about business is that when the market is there, these companies step up because they want to sell vehicles. And if you don't buy anything that produces, you know, a lot of pollution and creates a lot of CO2 and carbon footprint, the companies that are making cars are going to very quickly get the message because they want to stay in business. So let's all send them the message. The best message is to just go buy the most efficient vehicle you can find and that you can afford, of course. But really, the numbers start going up dramatically. If all of us were driving hybrids, we would be using about half the fuel to go any one place. That's about what it would be, about half the fuel. Now, the carbon footprint is not quite half. There's a hidden carbon problem in that the vehicles are using batteries, and the batteries themselves have a carbon footprint in their production. I guess you didn't know that problem. But that's behind-the-scene kind of thing. Most people don't know that. It's not advertised by the hybrid company. And it's not enough to not go buy a hybrid, but it's just something you should know, you know, up front, that it isn't completely like, oh, boy, we're saving half, because there's some carbon that's wasted in that respect. But nonetheless, it's still a huge, huge improvement. So half the fuel there. And then we cut it down by another 30-40% we're at from all the other things I just talked about. But before long, we're going to have to be emptying our gas tanks. There's going to be too much fuel in them. I don't think it works that way, but you've got the idea. So there's a tremendous amount that we can do just with the simplest things that are presently and readily available to us. The other thing I would suggest is downsizing the size and weight, especially the weight of the vehicle. Size has to do with wind resistance to some extent, although there's ways to make things that are big pretty slippery, like 747s and stuff. But generally speaking, size does make a difference, and even more importantly, weight. So try to find something that's lighter, but still safe. A lot of people say, well, heavier car, you know, I've got the heavier car if I smash into a lighter one, ha, ha, ha. Well, somebody's still getting hurt. I think it's important to realize that we all should be trying to shed the weight from what we're using for our vehicles, because it reduces the kinetic energy that is in the vehicle while we're moving, and it makes it much easier for everybody. And if you hit an inanimate object, you're actually better off in a lighter vehicle that's stronger than a heavier vehicle, just so you know. But it's important to recognize that there are a lot of trade-offs in everything, and that nothing is perfect, but a lighter vehicle can make a huge difference. buying a vehicle that is, say, 2,400 pounds instead of 3,400 pounds is a huge savings right there. Huge. Even if you, you know, calculated every other issue, that would be a big deal. Now, it's true, you could put a very inefficient engine in one and an efficient engine in another, and you can make up for some of the differences. Another thing I recommend is looking into transmissions that use a new system, but it's based on an old idea called constant velocity. So it's called CV transmissions. Now, there's only a few cars and trucks that have them available. But that's a good thing because it's always choosing the most efficient gear ratio for the engine to be working in. And really miraculous things can be done with computers these days to make the engine really perform best with the CV transmission. Unfortunately, most of our transmissions still have 3, 4, 5, whatever gears in them. If they're automatics, if they're manually shifted, it's even more problematic because most people don't know how to drive a manually shifted car so it produces the most gas mileage. For them, they should really get one of those gauges that tells them what kind of mileage they're getting. But at any rate, transmissions are almost as important as engines, actually. So if we could all get the CV transmission, especially teamed up with a super efficient either gasoline or possibly a diesel motor, they produce amazing gas mileage figures, like way over 100 miles to a gallon would be possible. Now, I mentioned diesel. Diesel isn't so bad. I know a lot of people say, oh, that sooty black stuff. Actually, the newest diesels produce very little soot, and they produce almost no sulfur, and so they don't put sulfur dioxide out in the air and other stuff. And they don't produce as much acid rains and things. And they're not any worse in their carbon footprint than our gasoline engines, but the good news is that they generally get like 20 to 30 or 40% better gas mileage depending upon the type of diesel and what vehicle it's teamed up with, et cetera. So they can get better fuel mileage. So diesel is not a bad thing. It's just you got to kind of do your homework on them because there's good ones and there's not so good ones. It's more problematic to buy an older vehicle with a diesel. Unless you're using it like we are, we have some older ones on the farm, it's one thing. But if you're traveling around the states, you know, going, doing a lot of driving, it could put out a significant amount of both particulates and sulfur because the old ones were kind of unregulated and just did their own thing with them. So that's a bit of a concern. Now, another thing that can be helpful is if you, when you are planning out your day, to try to make sure, as best as you can, that you drive in a logical way so that you're not going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Oh, I forgot this. I forgot that. Try to plan your day out because that can save a considerable amount of fuel because you're not driving as many miles. And if you go in a logical order to all the places you're going, you might save half the miles. Well, that's half the fuel. So there you go. Half the fuel, again, like I said, before long, we're going to have all this fuel laying around. We won't know what to do with it. But so that's another thing that's very helpful. And it's an exercise in consciousness, kind of like driving without putting your foot on the brake as much as possible. The same thing. It's an exercise in consciousness and awareness. Keeping your senses sharp and planning ahead, looking ahead at the same time. Well, I hope all these things have kind of made a little bit of an impression. We can all be doing these things. There is no question about it. There's no reason not to be. And if you would share the contents of this show with others, tell them to go to the archives. They're generally within a week or two, they're up on the BBS radio site. They're also on our site, which is agelesswisdom.com. And you can have other people listen to it so they can get the same messages. Because if we all started doing this, we would have a totally different country and a different world. I mean, this would be an amazing thing. For those of you in the U.S., I'm referring to you as a different country. But for the whole world, just imagine everybody started doing the things that I suggested just so far. We wouldn't be short of fuel or oil, but more importantly, we would be cutting down the carbon footprint dramatically. The carbon footprint is a serious issue. I'm going to come to the bigger picture again. Because this is what's causing, in my opinion, the major parts of climate change and global warming. We are putting a tremendous amount of carbon very suddenly into the atmosphere that took millions, even, well, not quite a billion, but hundreds of millions of years to collect underground from plants and insects and animals that was crushed under pressure and became oil. Some of it became coal as well. And this energy is being released in a crazy fashion. Just think, we're using it up so fast that we're going to run out of it. And it took hundreds of millions of years to be collected, sequestered from our atmosphere by the Earth itself. And now we're releasing it in a few decades. Well, if you don't believe that that's going to cause a problem, then you need to go and research, I suggest you do this, what has happened over time when CO2 levels have risen. What you'll find is that the temperature of the Earth rises in direct concert with the amount of carbon gases, particularly CO2, in the atmosphere. There are some other ones called methane, and even some amount of water vapor can cause warming. But CO2 is the big guy. It's the one that causes the most problem. And we have huge amounts of CO2 flooding in. China is now producing more than we are of CO2, as of this week, I heard. So that's another thing to be concerned about. Because I'm concerned about China, because they're a dark country. They're run by a communist dictatorship. And they don't have good wishes for us. I know we buy a lot of stuff from them, but they would like to take us over. One world. That's their dream. Remember that. Okay, so thought I'd add that in your little political commentary is always spicy. And if we are going to make a change, we need to make it immediately because the CO2 levels are reaching a tipping point, a critical tipping point in which the poles are being affected, particularly the North Pole. And the North Pole is going, within 5 years, it's predicted that the North Pole will be melted 6 months of the year. There won't be any ice there. You'll be able to go clear across the entire north section of the Arctic, North Arctic Sea, from the North Atlantic into the Pacific. Now tell me, that's not amazing. Yeah, you'll be able to actually go around the thing that was a vision for hundreds of years ago, people going from one ocean to the other. We'll actually be able to do it in the summertime. And so the amazing thing about this is that we are melting that ice at a rate that is way faster than was predicted in the year 2000. In the year 2000, we thought it would be 40 or 50 years before this occurrence would be happening, and it's going to be only 12 years. Things are really accelerated four times faster than what was predicted. That's a serious and very serious issue, because when the North Pole ice melt 6 months of the year, it will cause a cascading effect in the Greenland ice sheet, which is much more problematic, will quickly dissolve in about another 5 years from that point, about 2017 or 18, in that ballpark. And when it melts, the oceans rise. See, the ice that's floating on the ocean, when it melts, it doesn't cause the oceans to rise because it's already floating. But ice that's on land that melts is really serious. We're talking about as much as 20-foot rises in the sea level all across the planet. It's inconceivable. Those of you living on the coasts of any part of the U.S. or any part of the rest of the world, you're all facing very, very serious problems, 20-foot sea rise levels. So we have to do something to stop this. What I suggested during the first segment of the show can significantly slow it down. What I suggested in the prior two shows about how to live in our houses better, in our apartments, offices, stores, all those things that I suggested can make a significant difference. If everybody did everything that we've covered so far, we would virtually stop the rise of CO2 in its tracks. When I say everybody, who can do something. I'm not talking about the poorest of the poor. I'm not talking about people that are living under some very strange circumstances. I'm talking about most of the rest of us. If we all participate, we can make a change now. Only conservation can do it. There's no magic bullet here. I don't have something in my hip pocket or I can say, here, this is the gadget, just put it in your blank and it'll do well. No, we don't have that. And there isn't enough time to come up with it. There isn't enough time to develop all the alternative methods of generating energy, which I will talk about some in upcoming shows. But there isn't enough time to do those things and to save the world at the same time. By the time we get efficient and cost-effective solar generation, it'll be too late for many people who live in this world. They'll live in desertified areas where they can't grow food anymore. They'll be drowned out by rising sea levels, and a whole bunch of other terrible things will happen. Also, another doom and gloom thing is that the permafrost areas, particularly in the northern parts of our planet, are also melting. They're releasing methane, which is like 23 to 25 times more of a greenhouse gas producer, in other words, it builds up heat faster in our atmosphere, than carbon dioxide does. There's a huge amount of methane that's there. There's also methane in the bottom of the oceans that could wreak havoc on us as the oceans heat up. A lot of things we're facing, but we can change it. We have that opportunity right now by just doing the things that I've suggested and more. There are additional things, but they are less practical. There are things you can do with an automobile that actually would make it more efficient. I found that a cold ram air induction system actually significantly increased fuel mileage in a number of vehicles I have. Not very many vehicles have that really effect. They may have a cooler system, but they don't really have a cold ram air system. But those things are going beyond what most people are going to do. You're not going to take your hood off and buy a new hood and make a ram air induction system just so you can get two more, three more miles per gallon. But you can certainly fill up your tires. there are things you can do that are not, you know, that are not beyond what most people are going to reach for. And so we all can participate in this. I'm hoping that this show and other shows I've done and other people who are doing things in this will get us all motivated and active in doing this. You can contact me. I will talk to you on the phone. Call me up if you want. And collectively we can make a difference. But it's very important that we do something now and not wait. Again, if you wait for the government to do something, or if you're waiting for a rebate program or for some kind of tax credit or for something else, it's a foolhardy waste of life and the planet. Because by the time the governments do something, it really will be too late. We're not going to be able to pass laws fast enough. We're not going to be able to enact them anywhere near fast enough as we can on a volunteer basis. Everybody can be doing this. Today, on my house here, where I live, I ran my air conditioning in the early morning, and then I just shut it off, and I leave for the day, and it just cycles, and it hasn't come on yet. It won't come on for another 12 minutes or so, because that's when the energy is needed the most by other people, and so it balances out energy, and then plants can be made smaller, and there's more energy for everybody to use, and I save a little bit of money on my bill, too. But I've been doing this for many, many, many years. And it has been very effective. Over all the years I've been doing it, I probably have saved tens of thousands of dollars. It sounds like hyperbole, but it's the truth. I really have. I also super-insulated my attic and did many other things, which are these same things as what we're doing at Alternative Energy Approaches to help people to make the changes today. We're doing most of the planning and thinking for them, although people obviously are involved in the process. But they don't have to go out and learn something new. They don't have to build something themselves. We could do some of the work for them, and that allows them to do it painlessly and not have to alter their entire lives to just make a difference. Everybody can be involved in this. I'm hoping that those who are listening are going to say, well, you keep saying it. Maybe it's true. Maybe I can make a difference. Maybe I can really do something that'll change it. Okay, now I'm going to mention something else. It's pretty far out. I like these far out stuff. I said I was going to get to the far out stuff tonight. I've got about five minutes or so here. And I've come up with a method of traveling around our planet and even beyond that, but let's say around our planet, which is very simplistic. The concept is this. that we live really in a, think of it as like living in a big swimming pool of air. And we're all not floating in that air because we're heavier than the air itself. Now, you all are familiar with dirigibles and blimps. Those kinds of things are uncontrolled devices that kind of are at the whim of the air around them, and they're not very practical for moving about. But imagine this. If you had a structure that was relatively light, made out of like a carbon-fibered structure or something like that, and you filled up a substantial amount, but not anywhere near the whole thing, with helium gas that you ionize. Now, when you ionize helium gas, it actually becomes less dense, so it even has more buoyancy than hydrogen does, which is even a lighter gas. And you could make something buoyant and then use something called ion drive methods to, which is purely electrical, to run what we would consider to be a near-Earth spaceship of sorts. And it would take almost no energy to move it because it's lighter than air. It's floating on itself, and it doesn't, remember, it has no effective weight. And since weight it was the thing that was causing our inertia problem, there's virtually no inertial problems. Now, I've got a whole plan for this thing. And it's really far out, but it is practical and could be built today. I just haven't built one yet. I know. Well, we'll believe it when we see it yet. Okay. Well, when I get around to it, I will. But the point is it can be done. And this technology is really based upon some old ideas with some new ideas, kind of like synthesizing the two together. And it could produce effective means of travel, especially for transporting goods. Because that's where our biggest energy use is. It's not just everybody thinks it's, well, it's all the people running around. It's actually, we have to transport a lot of goods from one place to another, and be it over the sea or on land. Land uses more energy than the sea, but it still requires quite a bit of energy to do it. And this other method that I'm referring to, I realize it's kind of vague because I don't have a lot of time to explain exactly how it works, but would be very efficient and would allow for a very minimal amount of energy expenditure the ability to travel at quite fast speeds to any place on the globe. You could go around the Earth because you could travel at relatively high altitudes because you'd have to have pressure and other things. So you get into a whole system of understanding how to live in that way. But the point is that you could do this in a most efficient fashion. And our present methods of airplanes and jets and et cetera are very fuel consumptive. And they're also putting a lot of pollution in the upper atmosphere, which is not helping us much. So there's a lot of other issues that you get involved with by the present methods that we're doing. So that's not a far-out idea. I realize it's way out there because we're really talking about something that could be over 100,000 feet above the Earth, that people could travel to and from, even clear across the Earth and to any place, really, and at amazingly fast speeds, like thousands of miles an hour rather than hundreds. Okay, we are just about out of time. I want to give you some additional information. This Sunday, you can listen to me talk on the radio again from, where is it? Oh, here it is, WDISAM.com radio if you're anywhere in the United States, or 1170 AM if you're in the general northeastern part of the United States, anywhere, Providence, Rhode Island, Boston, whatever. You can tune in and listen to me from 4 to 5 Eastern Daylight Time, or if you're someplace else, then change the time, because wherever you are, figure it out. And I'll be talking this week on the plan for our planet. That's what I'm going to be discussing. The general plan for our planet, that's more of an esoteric subject, and it has to do more with the spiritual issue. Of course, I think everything we deal with here has some spiritual connotations to it. And this deals more with how I see God creating life in our planet in the way it should be. Well, we're out of time for right now, so I'll mention this one other thing. Anybody who's interested in the question of thinking about reincarnation, what it might mean, maybe, and does it exist, does it not exist, and what would the implications be? You can go and hear Mimi talk about it from 7 to 8:15 p.m. on May 5th. And she's going to be over at Borders Books and Music. Now, sometimes I show up for those things, but recently I haven't had much time to get there. And that's going to be in Glendale, Arizona, if you're in the Glendale area. Okay, well, we're out of time now for sure. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.